Okay, here I am. Okay, I added the text to my name so that you would know where this twang I speak with comes from, as if you wouldn't have known already. So I'm down here in the Big D area of Texas, and this is where our home office is now. NICT Anonymous World Services operates out of my home here in Texas. And it was very nice meeting Lydia this year at the conference. She's really a go-getter, and I was real pleased to meet with her. And when she asked me to speak, I didn't really want to, but she's very hard to turn down. So I accepted, and I'm glad I'm here. Thank you, Lydia, for pushing me to do more service work. Anyway, all day long, I keep trying to think, now, what am I going to say tonight? What am I going to say? And then my train of thought, as normal, goes about 30 seconds, and then I'm off to think about something else. And so I didn't get anywhere with what I'm going to say. So about 5 minutes ago, I just got on my knees and prayed to God. I said, God, you know the people in this room, you know what they need to hear for their recovery. So please use me as a vessel for you to speak your message through me to anyone who needs to hear something that will help them in their recovery. So hopefully we will get some of God's messages out tonight. I guess when I grew up, my father was a chain smoker. He had regular cigarettes in his right pocket and menthol cigarettes in his left pocket. And he was just constantly going between the two, going at it pretty fierce. And this went on my whole childhood. I couldn't stand being, I hated cigarettes, I hated smoke, I hated being in our living room watching TV. When my dad would come home, he'd lay on the couch and start smoking, and it'd be a solid ball of cloud of smoke between the couch and the TV. And I just hated growing up in that kind of environment, but that was my environment. So I grew up hating cigarettes, absolutely hating everything about them. And then when I was about 9 or 10, I was out in the closet in the garage with some of the other kids in my neighborhood. And somehow reason we had a cigarette and we smoked it. And that's where I smoked my first cigarette. And what I did, I took a few puffs and I went and threw up. It was horrible. I hated it. It tasted horrible. It made me throw up. I wanted nothing to do with cigarettes. So then when I'm about 16, it was the cool thing to do, smoke cigarettes. So I don't even remember my first one. I just remember at some point going to the store with my girlfriends, and we bought a pack of cigarettes. And so for the first 6 months, I smoked cigarettes just to be cool, but I never inhaled. I didn't know how to inhale. And then I think one of my more sophisticated girlfriends noticed I wasn't inhaling, and so she taught me how to inhale. So after I started inhaling, I guess that's when I started my nicotine addiction. And so for the next few years, I was just smoking to be cool. And I remember talking to a boyfriend of mine when I was a senior in high school about I should quit smoking. And he says, no, I think it's sexy woman to smoke. So that got me hooked some more just to stay sexy. I was going to smoke. And so anyway, I kept smoking and smoking. And at some point I quit. I think cigarettes got up to a dollar a pack or something, and I decided I was not spending more than a dollar for a pack of cigarettes. So I don't know what, I don't remember what I did, but I did quit. I think I just smoked pot instead of nicotine cigarettes. And then a couple months later, I moved up to Colorado. And when we got into Colorado, cigarettes were about 52 cents a pack. And I went, damn, I can't afford not to smoke here. So I went and bought me some cigarettes, started smoking again. And so I smoked, partied. I was a big drinker, big partier, and big pothead, and you name it. I was into it. So I was just the party girl. And always smoking. And then I worked in bars and restaurants for many years, probably mostly through my 20s, and it was just normal to be smoking in a bar or restaurant then. And I smoked and smoked and smoked, and I'm not sure, I think at some point I said, you know, when I'm 35, I'm going to quit everything. I'm going to quit drinking. I'm going to quit smoking. I'm going to quit pot. I'm going to quit everything, because I think 35 is a good age to clean up your act. So 35 comes and goes, and I'm just smoking, drinking, and everything right on through it. And then in my later 30s, I started thinking about needing to quit smoking, and so I started trying everything. I tried, I tried hypnosis. That worked for a little while, but then some crisis always happened, and I never knew how to make it through a crisis without a cigarette. I had no coping skills. As long as everything was status quo and went sort of calm, I was okay. But the minute something that stirred up emotions happened, I'd always go for the cigarette. And then there were times when I would quit. And then when I'd try the New Year's resolutions or something, and the minute I'd have a big craving, I'd always go back to smoking. I just didn't know what else to do. So probably for, I don't know, I'd say for about the last 20 years of my smoking, I tried to quit. And I just, nothing ever worked. Nothing lasted. The patch lasted probably longer than anything. I think I went 6 weeks with the patch, and that was the longest I ever got away from cigarettes, was 6 weeks. And so in sometime in my 40s, I had to start sobering up, and so I sobered up. And then sometime in my early 50s, I had to give up the pot, so I gave up the pot. But I was still smoking through it all. And it just seemed like even with the recovery I was getting in Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, going through the 12 steps, I was getting some recovery and getting some spirituality and beginning to get a relationship with my higher power. But it seemed like I had a smoke God. I never could get close enough to God to get really where I wanted to be in my recovery. I always just felt like I just had this smoke screen between us. And so, in AA, I watched more people die from smoking-related illnesses than I ever saw them die from drinking. And then when I was about 55, I thought, you know, this is it. I'm not going to be able to get away with smoking much longer without really suffering some major consequences. And so when I was 55, what had happened the last 10 years or so of my smoking, I'd become a closet smoker. And I worked in law firms, so I always worked in these big buildings downtown. And then I was a closet smoker. I'd go to some girls' bathroom, and other women would come in the bathroom and be full of smoke, and I'd be hiding behind the stalls, and I wouldn't show my head so they wouldn't know who was in there smoking. And that got to be pretty crazy, but I was too embarrassed to go out and smoke in the smoking section because I was this closet smoker, because I was so ashamed. I thought smoking was horrible. I was so ashamed of it. It really became socially unacceptable, and the more socially unacceptable it became, the more I went into the closet with my smoking. And somehow I smoked about a pack and a half cigarettes a day, but I worked 8 hours a day in an office and couldn't smoke. And I always had gum or always had some kind of breath freshener and always had body spray that I always used. And so I don't know if people really smelled it much or not, but somehow I still found a way to smoke for okay, here we go. Let's try it again. Okay, somehow, I mean, I worked 8 hours a day in an office, and I'd get away for lunch, and I'd smoke about a half pack of cigarettes during lunch hour, and I'd hose myself down with body spray and mouth stuff, and then I would go back to the office and work the rest of the day, and then I'd come home, and somehow I'd get a pack and a half cigarettes smoked every day. And then on weekends, I was probably smoking two packs a day. I'd go to work on Monday morning, and I couldn't even talk. My voice was so raspy and coughing so much that it was every Monday morning I was like that from having such a smoke-filled weekend. And so anyway, when I was 55, it got to where I don't even think I was smoking cigarettes. I think cigarettes were smoking me. It just got to where they were just eating me alive. It was either smoking a cigarette, or when I wasn't smoking a cigarette, I was thinking about how I was going to get that next cigarette. And then I'd be miserable till I got that next cigarette. And then I would beat myself up the whole time I was smoking the cigarette. And then as soon as it was over, I'm once again freaking out. How am I going to get to that next cigarette? I mean, it just got to where I think cigarettes and the wanting to quit and hating it and loving it and everything else was consuming about 18 hours of my day. I mean, it was horrible. And so when I was about 55, I said, you know what? I don't think I can get away with it any longer. So I decided I was really going to make a big effort to quit. And I just moved to Dallas, and I had heard about Nicotine Anonymous when I was in Houston. I'd heard about a Nicotine Anonymous group. I think it was called Smokers Anonymous back then. So anyway, I decided to look up Smokers Anonymous, and I found Nicotine Anonymous, and they had a meeting in Dallas. So I started going to it, and I get there, and I'm like, oh my God, it's like 51% of me. Or 49% of me. 49% of me wanted to quit. 51% of me didn't quit. And I got in this major conflict. It was like I really, really, really wanted Nicotine Anonymous to work for me. I knew Alcoholics Anonymous had worked for me. And I really wanted Nicotine Anonymous to work for me. And other part of me was scared to death that it was going to work for me. And I was going to have to quit, give up my cigarettes. And so then I got into this big conflict. It was the same thing. I'd smoke and I'd beat myself to death smoking. And then the minute I quit smoking, I'd, you know, just worry about when I'm going to get that next one. And then the conflict got heavier and heavier until I was just needing to go into a psych ward. I just drove myself insane with this. And I got to a point where I'd go to meetings and I'd go, I don't want to quit smoking. But every meeting I went to, I would get a desire chip. I'd get a desire chip, and I knew that the minute I got in my car, I'd light up and smoke all the way home. And I did this over and over. I did it for about 2 months, I guess. I would go to meetings 3 times a week, and I'd get a desire chip every meeting. I'd walk right outside, and I'd smoke. And I'd come to meetings and go, I don't really want to quit smoking. You know, I love my cigarettes. I don't want to quit smoking. And then I'd think, well, Teresa, what are you doing sitting in a Nicotine Anonymous meeting if that's really true? Do you really not want to quit? And so then I started thinking, no, I really do want to quit. And I'm not sure why I keep losing this mic, but I do. Anyway, so I tried to set a quit date, and this guy in my group said, just set a quit date. He goes, you are powerless over nicotine, right? And I said, yes, I'm powerless over nicotine. He goes, well, you're as powerless over smoking nicotine as you are quitting nicotine. So he said, when you try to set a quit date, you're trying to have power over nicotine. And he says, don't set a quit date. So I said, okay, I won't set a quit date. And they just said, look, don't even think about quitting smoking. Just think and get back to that next meeting. All you have to do is come to that next meeting. And don't worry about quitting smoking. It will take care of itself. So that's what I did. I just would smoke, smoke, smoke. I'd go to the next meeting. I'd smoke, 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 go to the next meeting. And after 2 or 3 months of this, I got to a point where I came home on a Friday night from work, and I went to bed. And I did not get out of bed until Monday morning. I mean, I got out of bed to use the bathroom. I got out of bed a couple of times to get something to eat. But that was about it that weekend. I can't even remember. I just got the fight, the conflict, and the inner fighting that was going on in me with smoking and trying to, wanting to quit and not wanting to quit. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It was just more than I could handle, and I just was flat out exhausted. And this happened to me 2 weekends in a row. I'd come home from work on a Friday night. I'd go to bed and stay in bed basically until I had to go back to work on Monday morning and would barely eat or anything. And so after I did that 2 weekends in a row on a Monday morning, on June the 9th of 08, So I woke up and I just fell on my knees and I said, God, I cannot make it through one more week like this. I just can't. I cannot quit smoking, period. I cannot quit. I am powerless over nicotine. I'm as powerless over quitting as I am smoking. I just 100% cannot do this myself. So if you want me to do this, then you're going to have to quit for me because I can't do it. And I just fell on my knees, dead tired, and said, take this from me, please. Please take this nicotine addiction from me. And I haven't smoked since. It was like once I got to that point of surrender, when I just realized that I cannot quit. I am totally powerless over nicotine. I'm as powerless over quitting as I am smoking. And I cannot do it. I could not quit. I could not quit. It was eating me alive, smoking me alive. And so when I got to that point, it was like a point of surrender when I just gave in. Yes, I'm powerless. You're going to have to do it for me. I can't. You can. So, and that's what it took. And so I quit smoking. I mean, I turned. It was not easy. I didn't really have any really bad cravings, but I did learn in my meetings that craving will go away whether you smoke or not. And see, I never knew that before. In the past, when I'd quit, when I'd get a major craving, I always thought you had to smoke again. But I learned that a craving will go away whether you smoke or not. And the longer you go without the next cigarette, the further the cravings will get apart. So that was good advice. And I kept getting crazier and crazier, though. I remember I was living in a house with this girl. And it was summertime. It was June in Texas. And she used a air conditioner too much, and about 3 weeks after I quit smoking, I walked in on a Saturday evening, and it was like 85 degrees in the house, and she had put one of those boxes over the thermostat so I couldn't change it. Well, I went in and beat the crap out of that box. I was 3 weeks not smoking, 85 degrees on Saturday evening, and I lost it. I went in and beat the crap out of that box on the AC. Anyway, I got kicked out of the house the next day. So I got a little bit emotional, and then at about day 60, I remember at about day 50 or so, that's when my emotions really started getting riled up. I remember calling my sponsor going, I am so angry. And I'm just so angry. And he goes, what's wrong? And I'm like, I don't know. I did not know what I was angry about. I just knew I was full of anger. And all this stuff was going on inside of me, and I was full of anger, but I did not have a clue what I was angry about. But it was the first time in like 40 years I was actually feeling all my feelings. And all these emotions and things were coming up from the past, but I didn't know how to identify them or what they were about. But I just screamed out all my anger, and then it wasn't until I got in and did the 12 steps that I started identifying a lot of it. But I just remember all the anger that came out. And then I got, about day 60, I get fired from my job. And I have to laugh when they read that about how emotionality and to the great peril of others. I really think that's sort of probably what got me fired. I don't think my coworkers knew how to the new me, and so I got fired. And that was sort of difficult, but I was like, you know, I was talking to my sponsor and talking to people from my meetings, and I said, you know, I'm going to try something different this time. Always in the past, when I quit smoking and something major happens, the first thing I do is go for a cigarette. But this time, I'm going to try your suggestions and just try the program of nicotine recovery and see if it'll work on this. So I decided instead of going for a cigarette, I was going to go to God, put my trust in God, and work the program of recovery. And for one, I didn't have to go smoke when something major happened. So that was a big growth for me. And so anyway, as I got into my recovery, my relationship with God got stronger, and I worked the steps. I'd worked the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous before, but it's quite different doing a fifth step when you don't have a cigarette in your hand behind it. It's a lot different. And so it was like this time going through the steps on nicotine and being nicotine free really helped clean out a lot and helped open up a very loving relationship with my higher power. And so about, I figured up how much I was spending smoking, which is a little over $200 a month. So every payday I would put back into a savings account how much money I would be spending on cigarettes the next 2 weeks. So every 2 weeks I'd put in $100 or so into a savings account. And after 3 years, I had enough to buy a house in Dallas. I mean, I didn't outright buy the house, but I had the first down payment in my life for a house. And I bought a house with the money I saved cigarettes. And I still have the house today, which I rent out because I'm not living there. And my renters are paying for the mortgage, and it's gone up in value like about 150% since I bought it. So it's been a very nice investment, and it was all from not smoking those first 3 years. Now, I wish I had kept up with the savings deal after I took it all out to make the down payment, but I didn't. So, but it would have been nice if I had, because now it's been, I think this was my 9th year to celebrate. This was my 9th year to celebrate being nicotine free, and I'd smoked for 40 years. So I'm telling you what, it works if you work it. My first year after quitting smoking, I had this extra money and I wanted to go on vacation, but I was scared to death, because my vacations were always spent smoking, and so idle time was not my friend. And do something, and a guy in my recovery said, well, Nicotine Anonymous has a conference every year. Why don't you go to that? And I thought, well, you know, that's a good idea, because that way it'll get me out of town for a weekend, and I'll be around non-smokers, so that'll be safe. And so I went to the conference, and while I was there, I got elected treasurer. And I really wasn't interested in being treasurer, but it sort of happened. I guess that was God's will for me. And while I was treasurer, our office manager passed away, and so since I had the current experience with the way things worked with Nicotine Anonymous, I was the best choice to come in and take over as office manager, and that was in 2011. So I've been taking care of, as office manager, I do the shipping for all the literature and help with the accounting and lots of other things I couldn't even begin to describe. But it's been a real honor and pleasure to work with nicotine addicts. I get calls all the time, and it always takes me back to the beginning. You know, when people are calling and they're really struggling with trying to quit, and it's just really humbling that God allowed me and helped me to get rid of this addiction. Because it's a horrible, horrible, deadly addiction. I had a couple of friends die over the past year from smoking-related illnesses, and it is just, it is so deadly and so horrible. I've just been very, very blessed. I think anyone who's in this room and has not smoked today, you are blessed. Very, very blessed. And, I wanted to say, after I'd quit smoking, maybe it had been a couple of years. I don't even remember. Maybe it had been 6 months. I don't remember. It was after a little while quitting smoking, I was having a really bad day at work one morning, and I told myself, you know, at lunch, I'm going to go buy a pack of cigarettes and smoke. I don't know why, but I was just really feeling bad. And so lunchtime comes, and I'm walking out to the car, and I go, well, it's lunchtime. Now, what am I going to do? Am I going to go buy cigarettes or what? And I thought, well, you know, I tell the group I would go over to the AA intergroup and buy some Desire Chips for our meeting. So I'm going to go do this bit of service work first. I'm going to go over there and get the Desire Chips. And then if I still feel like smoking after that, then I'll go buy the cigarettes. So I drive over there, and I go in, and the lady sitting there selling chips had an oxygen thing up her nose. And I look at her, and I look up at God, and I go, God, you've got such a sense of humor. I just cracked up. And her and I started talking, and she was saying, you know, I quit smoking 10 years ago or so, but I still got COPD. But my doctor told me if I hadn't quit, I wouldn't have such good quality of life. She goes, I'm able to get around and still do some work, volunteer work. And if I hadn't quit, I'd be at home on oxygen all the time in bed. So we talked for a while, and so I walked out, and my desire to go get cigarettes that day just totally left me, and it was like, I know God put that there just for me, and she was my little angel then that day, and I just love how God works, and how he's kept me sober and smober. In the mornings, I get on my knees and God, please keep me clean, sober, and smober today. And still, I still go to AA meetings, and it just kills me. They don't smoke inside where I go, but everybody's outside, you know, smoking, and it's like, as long as I don't have that drink today, everything's fine. And they're smoking themselves to death and just will not admit it. And it just breaks my heart. But, you know, it's sort of like outside issues with them, so I have to keep quiet. But I let people know every chance I get about Nicotine Anonymous. Anyway, I don't have my water in here, and I'm getting sort of choked up, so I think, I'm not sure when I'm supposed to stop, but hopefully I'm close enough to being able to stop.